Ladies and gentlemen, if you would please sit down, we would like to begin our last panel for today's conference. Ladies and gentlemen, if you could please sit down, we'd like to begin our last panel of the conference.
He'll meet with Xi Jinping tomorrow. I didn't know that.
Okay, so good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Jiwoo Sol, and I'm here to introduce the last panel, which is entitled Korean Unification, Prospects and Challenges. This panel aims to bring together all elements and aspects that were discussed in the forum today. And our moderator today is, we're chaired by Mr. Dan Damon, who is currently the presenter of World Update on BBC World Service. And our speakers are, in the order of their sitting, Professor Liu Ming, Dr. Jonathan Pollock, and Professor Kil Jae-ryu. Without further ado, I'd like to welcome and start this panel discussion with a brief speech by Mr. Dan Damon. So please welcome him with a round of applause.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and thank you for staying to the end. I don't think you'll be disappointed. And I must congratulate the organizers for not only timeliness, but getting a group of panels together who have really covered a lot of very important ground at a time that we must start thinking in much more creative, much more nuanced ways about North Korea. Yes, I am a presenter of a program each day at 10 o'clock in the morning, should you choose to tune in. But I suppose my justification for being here is that for some years I've been campaigning for the BBC to broadcast in Korean. And finally, the decision was taken last year. I'll just briefly, you didn't come to listen to me, but I will briefly tell you where we're up to. We are recruiting now. The intention is to be on the air by the end of this year, hopefully before that. We have made a couple of appointments. One is the BBC person who is not a Korean but who will create the machinery for this to happen, who understands the way the BBC works. And then we have recruited, although I can't make an announcement because it's not out yet, a Korean editor, a service editor. And we are recruiting still for reporters and producers. There'll be more interviews in Seoul next week. We are, of course, trying to get North Korean voices. It's always been my intention that there would be enough North Korean voices for people listening to us in North Korea to feel as though it was their service. Because whenever I speak to people who are refugees from the North, they tell me how great it was when they were listening to foreign broadcasts to hear voices that sounded like North Koreans. It's not easy, but we're working on that. Of course, many of our recruits, and we've had a lot of applications, are from South Korea or they're Korean Americans, but we are getting a really good group of people together. And please stay in touch with that. There will be announcements. I should make the point that the BBC doesn't do regime change. This is not a North Korean service. This is a Korean language service. In the same way that we don't have an Iranian, we don't have BBC Iran, we have BBC Persian, and so on. So, and also, I have always intended that this would be of interest and value to South Koreans as well, and indeed those who live in Los Angeles come to that. And it would be important that the news we give is objective from all points of view. It is not aimed at the North Korean government. However, of course, it is aimed at their policy of not giving free information. The North Korean ambassador to London said it's an act of war, which is a pity because we don't see it that way. And one of the things that I would love to see is training that we can offer. The BBC can offer training to broadcasters from around the world, and I would love to see a North Korean contingent turn up for training at the BBC, and I look forward to that day. Well, we're here to talk about unification. I suppose my interest in Korean unification came after I covered the collapse of communism in Eastern Europe. Kim Dae-jung was influenced by the same set of events, of course, because he wrote a three-phase program for the reunification of the Korean Peninsula and indeed studied in Germany to do it. We're still waiting, but I do believe that there are many aspects to unification that would provide such a huge potential for people on both sides of the 38th parallel. So let me introduce you to our guests who will talk about the potential and the prospects for unification. And let me begin perhaps with Professor Ryu, Professor Kilje Ryu, please.
I come back again. this is first time is to make a speech in the morning and in the afternoon.
So Professor Professor Ryu would like to he had not come prepared because he wanted to summarize everything in the conference and speak at the during the afternoon.
오후에 제가 얘기를 할 때는 하루 종일 이제 나오는 얘기들을 좀 듣고 어떤 말씀을 드려야 될지 생각을 해서 말을 해야 되겠다 이렇게 생각을 했습니다.
So he was thinking all day long as he was attending the conference about all perspectives and aspects that came up during the conference to provide an exclusive informative speech about reunification of Korea.
북한 문제 또 통일 문제 저희는 그것을 북한 통일 문제라고 보통 얘기를 합니다.
So the problem of North Korea, the issue of North Korea, and also the issue of reunification is often considered together in South Korean government, and we call them issue of reunification with North Korea.
And not only the government, but also the society. We call the usually the North Korea unification issue. 이 문제, 북한 통일 문제에 대한 그 한국 사회에서의 관심은 자꾸만 떨어지고 있습니다.
The interest of Korean society regarding the reunification with North Korea has been declining ever since.
국제 사회에서는 북한 문제는 아마 뭐 김정은이 계속해서 사고를 치기 때문에 도발을 하기 때문에 아마 뭐 인기가 있는 문제는 아니겠지만 계속해서 이렇게 주의를 당기는 그런 문제인 것 같습니다.
Although the issue of North Korea is not a very attractive or popular one in the international society, the reason why Professor Ryu believes that there is some degree of interest of North Korea in the international society is due to the fact that Kim Jong-un is constantly making attempts to provoke the international society.
오전에 제가 말씀드렸지만 북한은 북한 사람들은 남한 사람들에게 있어서 형제고 자매입니다. 같은 피를 나눈 그런 가족들입니다. 피를 같이 나눈 사람들입니다. 저도 역시 저희 어머니가 북한 출신입니다.
As Professor Ryu talked in the morning, North Koreans and South Koreans are basically, they share the same bloodline and they are to be considered as siblings instead of different citizens from different countries. And Mr. Ryu, in fact, his grandmother is from North Korea.
그래서 저는 지금 비록 한국 사회에서 북한 통일 문제가 관심도 없고 관심도 많이 떨어져 있고 그런 주제지만 우리 한국 사람들에게는 남한 사람들에게 이 문제는 굉장히 중요한 문제고 통일이 되느냐 안 되느냐 하는 그런 현실적인 문제로서 따질 것이 아니고 반드시 이루어야 된다라고 하는 그런 생각을 갖고 접근해야 될 문제라고 저는 생각을 합니다.
Although the interest regarding reunification with North Korea is declining in the South Korean society, Professor Ryu believes that this issue is a very important issue to South Korea and North Korea, and believes that the issue should be looked at not from the perspective of whether or not reunification is practical or achievable, but that we should actually try to achieve it and the means are the more important than the consequences.
I teach and work at the University of North Korean Studies, which is comprised of graduate school students, master course students, and PhD course students. They are all the studying the North Korean studies. As usually one per year, more than 80 students come to the university. Most of them have their job related to the unification issue. 저는 학생들에게 가끔 그런 얘기를 합니다. 북한 통일 문제를 여러분들은 공부를 하는데 이 공부를 하는 것은 머리로만 하는 게 아니고 이 가슴도 같이 있어야 된다. 이게 없으면은 절대로 북한 이 문제를 제대로 이해할 수 없다라는 얘기를 합니다.
Professor Ryu often tell his students who study tell his students that although they study the issue of achieving unification, they really need to think of unification through their hearts. They really need to empathize and try to sympathize with North Koreans instead of simply thinking about the issue of reunification through their heads and thinking about it logically and practically.
통일 문제에 대해서 제가 간단히 말씀을 드리겠습니다. 통일 문제는 남북관계가 우선 발전을 해야 됩니다. 그리고 한국의 역할이 있습니다. 통일을 하기 위해서는 한국이 통일을 위해 준비해야 될 것이 많이 있습니다. 그리고 마지막으로는 역시 국제사회의 블레싱이 있어야 됩니다.
So to briefly mention three factors that are necessary to bringing reunification. First of all, Professor Ryu believes that there needs to be improvement in regards to the relationship between North Korea and South Korea. And second, he believes that South Korea's role is very crucial in achieving reunification and that there needs to be more preparation done to achieve reunification. And the third factor, finally, is that we, South Korea and North Korea, need the blessings of the international society and the international actors in order to bring a successful reunification.
그동안 한국 사회에서는 뭐 한국 정부뿐만이 아니라 한국 사회에서는 주로 남북 관계를 어떻게 발전시키느냐, 그다음에 두 번째로는 국제 사회로부터 지지를 어떻게 받을 것이냐, 주로 이 두 가지 차원의 문제에 관심을 기울여 왔습니다.
So far, South Korean, not only South Korean society, but also the government has mainly focused on two aspects of reunification. First of all, is how to improve the relationship between North and South Korea, and second of all, is to how to receive the support of other international actors to achieve in the process of bringing reunification.
물론 북한이 핵 실험을 한 2006년 이후에 북한 핵 문제 때문에 사실 남북 관계도 안 좋아졌고 또 국제사회로부터의 그 지지 지원을 받는 것도 상당히 어렵게 된 건 사실입니다.
It is true. Professor Ryu, however, does admit that ever since 2006, when North Korea provoked the issue of nuclear weapons, there has been a disruption, massive disruption in the relationship between North and South Korea, and also there has been a decreased support to bring on reunification.
그렇지만 사실 통일을 한다 그러면 아까 오전에 제가 말씀드렸다시피 제가 말씀드리는 통일은 반드시 일민족 일국가 일정부 일체제를 꼭 의미하는 거, 말하자면 유니터리 스테이트를 의미하는 건 아닙니다. 물론 이런 통일을 어떻게 볼 것이냐, 어떻게 생각할 것이냐에 대한 것도 사실 한국 사회에서 아직 그 이 정립이 되어 있지는 정리가 되어 있지는 않습니다. 그렇지만 저는 조금 과정으로서의 통일을 전 얘기를 하고 싶습니다. 또 그리고 그러한 생각은 한국 사회 많은 전문가들에게 공유되고 있습니다.
As Professor Ryu mentioned in the morning session, he believes that reunification is not about having one ethnic, one state, or one government. And basically, he doesn't believe that reunification equals bringing a unitary state. Although this is not yet clearly defined, even in Korea, the process Professor Ryu believes that is crucial in bringing reunification is having an agreement as the process of reunification, which is a view that is shared by many experts and professionals in the Korean society.
그런 방식으로 통일을 이루기 위해서 가장 중요한 것은 전 한국의 역할이고 한국의 역량이라고 저는 생각을 합니다. 그런데 지금 한국 사회를 놓고 보면 저는 과연 한국 정부나 사회가 그런 역할을 또 맡을 수 있고 또 그런 역량을 갖고 있느냐. 말하자면 통일을 그런 통일을 이끌어낼 수 있는 그런 역할과 역량을 갖고 있는지에 대해서 저는 대단히 회의적입니다.
Professor Ryu believes that in order to achieve the reunification in terms of agreement regarding the process of it, he believes that two elements necessary are Korea's role in it, and second of all, that the Korean government needs to have the capacity and the ability to bring on about such reunification. However, Professor Ryu believes that currently looking at Korean society and the South Korean government, both of them do not have the ability and the capability of achieving such role and carrying out such role in the process of reunification.
많은 사람들은 한반도 통일을 얘기하면 주로 경제적인 관점에서 많이 봅니다. 비용의 측면에서도 그렇고 효과의 측면에서도 그렇고 경제적인 측면에서 많이 보고 또 한국이 북한보다 경제력이 압도적으로 우위에 있기 때문에 비용이 아무리 많이 든다 하더라도 그걸 감당할 수 있는 그런 측면이 있다고들 얘기를 합니다.
When most people consider the possibility or the process of reunification, many experts and people approach it from an economic aspect. So they first consider the cost regarding reunification, and second of all, the effect reunification will have on the economies of South Korea and North Korea. And because South Korea excels in economy and excels in the development of its market compared to that of the North Koreans, many people believe that South Korea have the capacity and the money and the financial support to bring on and to support the cost that is necessary in bringing on reunification.
뭐 통일 비용에 대해서는 사실 뭐 얘기가 이제 길기 때문에 제가 일단 그렇게만 말씀을 드리고요. 그런데 저는 통일은 경제적인 관점에서 접근해서는 안 된다는 게 제 개인적인 신념입니다.
If Professor Ryu talks about the economic aspect of reunification, the lecture will go on too long. He'll cut it short for now. But Professor Ryu strongly believes that we should not consider reunification in terms of money or in only from an economic perspective.
저는 오히려 평화의 관점에서 통일을 좀 봤으면 좋겠다는 생각입니다. 우리 남북한은 60여 년 전에 총뿌리를 겨누고 전쟁을 했습니다. 동족 상잔의 전쟁을 했습니다.
Professor Ryu rather believes that we should consider reunification from the perspective of prioritizing peace. Korea, South Korea and North Korea 60 years ago were in a civil war where people of the same race and ethnic tried to kill each other and tried to murder each other.
그리고 아침에도 제가 말씀드렸지만 지금 동북아시아에 미국과 중국 또 일본과 중국 간에 이런 갈등이 점점 심해질 것으로 예상이 되기 때문에 뭐 동북아시아에서 전쟁이 난다고 제가 예상하는 것은 아니지만 동북아시아의 그 안보 상황이 긴장이 고조되고 있기 때문에 그런 측면에서도 저는 한반도가 남북한이 서로를 대하는 데 있어서 통일을 지향한다면 평화롭게 가는 것이 한반도를 위해서도 바람직할 뿐만 아니라 동북아 전체를 위해서도 바람직하고 그런 점에서 한반도가 동북아의 평화를 이끌고 나갈 수 있을 굉장히 좋은 장소가 아닌가 생각을 합니다.
As Professor Ryu mentioned in the morning speech, he believes that the tensions in the Northeast Asia region is currently very high and very eruptive, especially considering the relationship between America and China and Japan and China. He's not saying that there is soon going to be a war in the Northeast Asia region, but he's saying that the security is very unstable right now. So he believes that if South Korea and North Korea were to reunite together, he believes that they should do so in a peaceful way so that it could preserve the security and decrease the tension in Northeast Asia. Thus, he believes that, therefore, Korean Peninsula is a key to, may be a key to preserving the peaceful atmosphere of the Northeast Asia region.
Professor, may I? Do you mind if I stop you there?
제가 두 가지 에피소드만 말씀드리고 끝내겠습니다.
감사합니다.
He'll stop after two more episodes.
하나는 그 제가 공직에 있을 때 남북 간의 회담을 합니다. 제가 우리 회담 대표들에게 그런 얘기를 했습니다. 쿨하게 대하고 드라이하게 대하고 but 나이스하게 대해라.
So when he was when Professor Ryu was the Minister of Unification for the South Korean government, whenever he was leading the South Korea North Korea talks South Korean government and North Korean government talks, he would always tell his colleagues be cool, be dry, but always be nice to the North Korean officials.
그리고 두 번째 에피소드는 북한이 간접적으로 특히 낮은 선봉 라선 쪽에 우리 정부에게 좀 도와줬으면 좋겠다 하는 그런 얘기를 들었는데 도와는 주되 공개하면 안 된다. 말하자면 비밀리에 도와야 된다. 그러면 자기들이 도움을 받겠다. 이런 얘기를 했습니다. 나선. Rason is the is a economic special zone, special economic zone, the northeastern the city, the Rajin, the combination of the Rajin and the Sonbong.
And the second advice he would give to his colleagues is whenever North Korea passively requests for help regarding the special economic zones, he would always tell his colleagues to help them in whatever ways the South Korean government can, but make sure it's done in a secretive way so that North Korea could actually receive help, but not explicitly from South Korea.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Professor. Let's come to Dr. Jonathan Pollard now. I think, Dr. Pollack, that like me, you once thought in terms of collapse as reunification, and you've changed your mind. Could you tell us how that came about?
Well, what came about is 20 years when it hasn't happened. As I often like to say, and first, as prefatory comment, I want to thank LSE for the opportunity to be here today on an absurdly short visit to London, but one that I'm benefiting a great deal from and listening to the discussion here today. What experience should tell us, and we always remember what Lord Keynes said about when facts change, you change your opinion. I must say 20 years ago, I would not have imagined that a regime under this kind of acute economic and related forms of pressure would have been able to survive, and here we are. There is, in effect, a Kim operating system. It has changed to an extent over the years, but its persistence over time is really quite an extraordinary and even unique story in international relations. Professor Ryu has probably indicated the only way we will get to reunification, it will be virtual unification, not real unification, because we're talking here that even if it is a common bloodline of two Koreas that have lived in profoundly different worlds now for more than 70 years, in fact, how you count and if you walk it back even longer than that. So here we have a question fundamentally of how or if it is possible to graft onto the North Korean state and system a modern society, an internationally engaged society, that not that it would be co-equal with the South, because it can't be. It's not by population, it can't be co-equal. More to the point, South Korea, as we all know, is one of the most globalized societies in the world. It's really remarkable when we step back and ask ourselves about these differential circumstances. Economically, at this point, I know there are a range of estimates, but often it is said that perhaps the South Korean economy is, 25 times or more? That I defer to Brad on that in terms of the absolute measures. but it's profoundly more larger economically. And yet, here we are talking about North Korea as this a persistent danger to the international community. It gets a remarkable degree of attention internationally, and maybe we can thank Kim Jong-un for the attention here at this meeting, because his timing, or the timing rather, the organizers of this meeting was so remarkably good. I don't say that to be flippant. So if you could imagine reunification as kind of a state of mind, if you will, something that maybe permits some degree of meaningful interaction, maybe then you have a process over time. But if we can imagine that, you have to ask how you get there, because what it ultimately, I think, would require is an ability or a willingness of the leaders of the North to consent to a relationship with the outside world, beginning with their fellow Koreans, that is profoundly different from anything that has been undertaken now for 70 years. The possibility of this happening, I would argue, is likely to go up to some significant extent in about 55 days, because you will have a new government in the South. And I must say, if Minju, the Democratic Party, cannot win this election, they should find another line of work. The very strong likelihood is that Moon Jae-in most likely would be the next president. Governor An might give him a run for his money. We'll see. The situation in South Korea is very, very volatile now, as we know. But what we will probably see is something more along the lines of what we saw under Noh Myung-hyun and under Kim Dae-jung, which, by the way, I might note, as I say this from an American perspective, will raise the issue of whether or not the United States and the Republic of Korea are potentially headed yet again for a very, very sharp clash of interest and perspective, not unlike what applied under George W. Bush with Noh Myung-hyun in particular, but also with DJ. So let me flag that as an issue that we need to think about. I did, however, promise the organizers that I might make a few very quick comments about deliberations in the United States about Korea policy. Every president of recent vintage, one of the first things they do when they approach office is they have a North Korea policy review. There's nothing unique in Trump undertaking that. Barack Obama did it before him, and George W. Bush did it before him. And that says something about the persistence and now the worsening of this issue from purely from the point of view of North Korea's capacities with respect to nuclear weapons and missiles. And the question is, what can be done about it? I will tell you that 2 days after Mr. Trump was elected president, he visited the White House, and President Obama told him that this problem would consume far more of his attention than almost any other foreign policy matter he might have to deal with. And even in those intervening several months, first Trump's time as president-elect and now as president, Obama's prediction has come true. I would argue that no international issue has consumed more of President Trump's direct engagement than the question of North Korea. Now, many people look at Trump and we see the public face of him, the very angry man, what we like to say in America, he's a sore winner, which is kind of an interesting phenomenon. He's angry, he tweets, and so forth. We all know that. But less visible, there's a private Trump. I don't want to say that he's deeply reflective in that respect, but I can assure you that he has engaged in very, very regular interactions with the American intelligence community, even though he is ferociously critical of the intelligence community at other levels publicly. There have been major meetings in the Situation Room about what to do. And now, of course, we have Secretary of State Tillerson on his mission to Asia. He said some slightly provocative things yesterday in Seoul. He said decidedly less provocative things today in Beijing, where it really was almost a stroll down memory lane as he and Foreign Minister Wang Yi joined at the hip, talked about all forms of ways in which the two countries could collaborate, and there's urgency to this, et cetera, et cetera. He will meet tomorrow with Xi Jinping. And I don't want to therefore say that all is well, but what I think it highlights is that despite all the sentiments that get generated within an American policy process, when you really sit down and look at your realistic options, they narrow acutely, and there's for one and one reason more than any other. And that is the consequences of trying to think differently, or as some would put it in American jargon, to think about quote-unquote kinetic options, are so profoundly unsettling that every American president who has looked at this, every American military commander who has looked at this, even if you at the end of the day, you declare victory, quote unquote, whatever that looks like. The consequences for war on the peninsula and in Northeast Asia are so almost beyond imagination that you step back from it. But if that's the case, then the question becomes, does that mean you consent to a nuclear weapons capability? Are there things that North Korea would do that would simply go so far that the United States and others would not be prepared to accept them? I raised this issue to an extent this morning in our discussion. North Korea, of course, and Kim Jong-un would wish us to believe that he is in possession of significant capabilities and even could mount a nuclear warhead on a missile. Well, there's only one way to prove that. That's to do it. Would he dare? Would he dare? This is an international norm that North Korea has never violated. They may do it for reasons of simple prudence. They may do it for reasons of technical lack of feasibility. But for all of the North's ferocious rhetoric, they haven't ventured down this path yet. If they are prepared to do so, then we confront the potential for the biggest crisis in East Asia since the Korean War. We're not at that point, but some believe that we could be before very long. The last comment I'll make, because time is short, is simply that what this really reflects in so many ways is a kind of a cumulative history. When I look at any international issue, the first question I ask myself is, how did we get here? What were the sequence of decisions, actions, inactions, miscalculations, consequences that led us to this moment? It's not a theoretical perspective, even though I'm trained in international relations. It's history, an evolution of factors. And where we are, of course, reflects a very, very complex but known history. It's not that much in the North Korea is nearly as obscure as people make it out to be. But there we are. So the question then becomes, if Kim Jong-un, and by his actions and his words, I'll take him at his word this case, under no conceivable circumstances is prepared to give up his treasured sword. Interesting metaphor, you know, because it's supposed to be something to defend you, but a sword is more than for purposes of defense. Then we enter very, very long-term, very, very dangerous and unsettling waters, which may be other paths to unification, but maybe not in a good way.
No, I agree with that. And I have good friends within artillery range of the KPA, and I don't look forward to that. And when I'm trying to overcome that feeling, I think about the potential for a unified Korea with the natural resources and the industrial power and the inventiveness of the people across the peninsula. It makes me feel good.
And the greatest wildlife park in the world.
Jeju.
And I don't say that jokingly, you know. So.
Thank you very much indeed, Dr. Pollock. Professor Mingyu, please.
Forrestal is one of the prominent, excellent strategists and make study, solid study on North Korea over a long time. But the U.S. Three president failed in North Korea and let this nuclear development continue. And for Chinese policy, North Korea policy, three president from Jiang Zemin, Hu Jintao, even to current leader, I think all failed. Yeah, so we are the major powers. Always we talk a lot about strategic, but always a fail. Yeah, we could not deal with this small country. Yeah,
it's a collective failure.
Correct. Yeah, you are right. And first, thank you for the LSE and particularly for this student society. And because in LSE and we have the largest Chinese student. Just yesterday, they told me they have 1,000 Chinese students here. Yeah, and more PhD and master degree student rather than the undergraduate student. So, and it's my obligation. Yeah, to come here to say something. Yeah, and on my right side, from BBC, and I receive so many overseas interview is from BBC. Yeah. When there's a Mandarin and the department, and the broadcasting in Mandarin, and whenever there's something happen in Korea, North Korea, South Korea, they will call me for interview. Yeah, but now no more Mandarin broadcasting, but sometimes just a website. So sometimes load something like for the Korean War, something like that. Yeah. So thank you for BBC. Yeah. And let my voice to be aired overseas. And come back to this unification, because since this is the panel, so the organizer asked me to say something about unification. So I tried to thinking over whether the Chinese government has some kind of unification policy. Mm-hmm. Actually, I don't find any kind of real and substantial unification policy. So what I said is something in my mind. I try to be and to sum up something in practice. I think in the Cold War years, and I think Chinese leader support this political support, Kim Il-sung's different kind of formula, like Koguri Confederation or something like that, But after the Cold War, and I think China's policy to be more in principle, on the unification, because we have a very good relations with South Korea. So we keep open to unification, and the precondition is that peaceful and independent. So this is something I think it's really means something. That means we don't support a kind of a military solution or kind of through a regime change to realize such kind of a unification. And we want to unify the Korea to be keep a kind of independent. Yeah, of course. We, in my mind, that will be still ally of the United States, but China, future unified Korea, we will have a very close economic relation. Even at this moment, we have some retaliation on South Korea, on the third deployment. But this tough time will be overcome, And because of this very special reason, So I don't think this relation, this difficult relation will over long term. The second point is that when we talk about unification, and as Paulson mentioned, the collapse, I think the first time I talk with the U.S. Is in Hawaii in 1998, as I remember. At that time, the collapse scenario was quite prevalent. Yeah. So a large group of people, China scholars and Korean scholars, and in the U.S., and some scholars from Beijing, we joined together in the Hawaii. So we talk a lot about how we could deal with together with this collapse. But I still remember I wrote many articles, and I think North Korea, this regime, has a super capability to sustain the difficulty or scenarios, different scenarios. Yeah, even you think they could not overcome, they could overcome. Yeah. So actually, now it's more than 20 years. Yeah, so this regime is still there. The leader changed, but the nation, the regime is still there. Yeah. So I don't think China think this unification is reachable, or it's now the condition is ripe. This is a different conflicting political system. In the morning, we talk about the ideology. They say that some people say ideology is not important, but it really important for two Korea. Yeah, because of a different ideology, I don't think they could get along very well. Germany, we know this is a collapse, downfall of the Berlin Wall, and for Vietnam is a military solution. Yeah, so I don't see North and South Korea. These are different, quite different system, political system. They could to be reunified within maybe a very short time in the far future. Yeah, so I don't think. I think even Chinese officials or government, I don't think this is time. And we know the Madam Park, Park Geun-hye, the former president, when she visited Beijing the 2015, and when she participated in Beijing, the parade, she talked with Xi Jinping, and when she came back, she said a lot of things that Xi Jinping support this Korean South Korean led unification or something like that. Yeah, but on different occasion, I doubt that Xi Jinping will say in that way. Yeah, we always keep a kind of a very unclear, not crystal message to different Korean leaders. Yeah, we support just in general. I don't think we will openly support that South Korea, you could take a lead reunify Korea. Yeah, so we just open the future. Yeah, so the condition I don't think right now is clear. For unification, nuclear weapons is a Kim Jong-un's strategic goal. I don't think he will easily abandon unless U.S. takes some, as the Secretary of State Tillerson said, now this time is a real military option. Yeah, I hope this year is real. Yeah, always say this is one of the options, is on the agenda on the table. But it's more and more difficult after this long time of North Korean nuclear development. Yeah. So I don't think they will abandon, even freeze nuclear development. Yeah. So with this nuclear at this leader's hand, I don't think South Korea will accept to talk with them. So even this, we just mentioned the opposition party, Mr. Moon become president, I don't think the time could be back to King DJ and to Roh Moo Hyeo. Yeah. The time is different. South Korea media and I think atmosphere will not accept any new government to carry out a kind of a new sunshine policy with North Korea, because after five nuclear tests, after more than 25 missile firing, How can South Korea people support a president to go ahead a kind of a dialogue with North Korea? And then North Korea will ask for a kind of assistance. Yeah. So the future of South Korea leader after the May 9th election, I think still will be cautious. Yeah. A kind of maybe lower level talks will maybe be possible, but I don't think they will high level talks. Yeah, and North Korea will not abandon. Yeah, so this is something is clear. Is a condition that if this obstacle, if this obstacle could not be eliminated, I don't think two Korea could go ahead. Final point is about still go to this. Madam Park's proposal. The things our friend, former minister on unification, I always keep critical views about Park and his, overstress this unification. This is not the right time. And when he gave a speech at Germany, says a lot, it seems that the unification will soon come. Yeah. And so many projects, so many funding, even set up a new organization, let people feel that even in Shanghai, in Shandong, in Qingdao, in Liaoning, there are so many conferences. Even I have to write something. They ask me to write. Yeah, because they spend a lot of money. So this is become a kind of a propaganda. Unification will be realized, I think, just based on the timing and the condition, right? Yeah, but it's not just a political propaganda. Yeah, we need a preparation. This is good. We need some kind of education for young people. But we should not overstress, exaggerate, then which will give North Korea some kind of impression. Yeah, so they will keep a kind of a policy against South Korea. Prevent a kind of what they call a peaceful evolution. Yeah, so I'll just stop here. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. We'll go straight to your questions. I'm going to pose some questions that I'm not going to ask, but one is the Kim Dae-jung policy, this three-phase policy, is it still valid? Confederation, federation, and then something else. And also, if there were an American agreement not to go beyond the 38th parallel, would that make unification easier, and would Chinese policy change? You can just ponder those things and ask your own questions. Could we take the microphone to this side of the room, please? There's a gentleman with a water bottle, excuse me. Gentleman with a water bottle, yeah. And could we bring the mic, if we have two mics, could we bring one to this side, please? Start with yourself. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Hi, my name is King Ma. I work in health tech or care tech startup. My question is probably better directed at the previous panel, but I didn't get the chance to ask it, so here we are. But I think it's still very relevant. It's as follows. Based on your experiences, based on your conversations with North Korean people, what do you think is their emotional response to the possibility of conflict, the possibility of war between North Korea, South Korea, possibly involving America as well? And how does that differ from the official propaganda, the official politicians? Thank you.
Okay, the possibility of war. And this gentleman here. Not great. Just one, give it 1 second. Otherwise, you're going to have to shout. No, okay.
I think,
Hi. I'm a second year student from the international.
It's still not really working, so could you give me another mic?
If you could hold it closer.
That's better.
Okay. I'm a second year student studying international relations at the RSC here. So my question is quite simple. To what extent do you think that whether both Koreas can unite is not dependent on both Koreas' preference or their choice, but rather is dependent upon the power struggle between US and China? I mean, do you think that whether they can unify is not their choice, but it's the choice of China and the US?
Yeah. So the possibility of war, and also if Koreans were left to their own devices without mm-hmm. great power interference, would unification be more likely? I'll start with you, Professor Pollack, Dr. Pollack, if you will.
Yeah. Sure. There is, to your latter question, you know, there have been fleeting times over the history of division in Korea where there have been discussions between the two Koreas that talked about unification. The most prominent one, of course, is when both Koreas feared that the great powers, in the aftermath of Dr. Kissinger's trip to Beijing, would take this situation into their own hands. And that was the context in which, and there are remarkable declassified documents from the ROK Foreign Ministry about this very, very high-level discussions between the then head of the Korean CIA and Kim Il-sung that talked about manipulation by great powers. But like most things in Korea, it didn't last. I don't want to go off in a long rendering of all that was involved. But I suppose there's always that fear, in some measure, in some parts of the two Koreas, of being manipulated by the great powers, taken advantage of by the great powers, if indeed, as Tillerson and Wang Yi said today in Beijing, that there was some new urgency to heighten cooperation between the United States and China, and it was not with a blame game that was sort of a shared responsibility and so forth, that could trigger some of those sentiments again. I think, very frankly, those would be more induced again under a Moon Jae-in presidency. Moon might not do a complete revisiting of Sunshine, but some of his priorities are very, very clear. Moon does not see the extant system of government and governance in South Korea as a legitimate form of government. He wants to take this back. He wants it to be more something that, in essence, creates some measure of separation to an extent between the United States and Korea. That may be his vision. It may not happen in reality. But either way, it does suggest to me that it's more the gravitational forces are pulling back in the direction that might very well lead to some renewed discussions between North and South. If they go anywhere, I don't know. For North Korea, if I could just leave it at this, North Korea's goal is always to create political space, to find ways in which you can maneuver and potentially manipulate between all the surrounding powers. And that opportunity may again create itself right now. I dare say, as I observed to some people earlier here, that the decline and fall of President Park was done without North Korea having to lift a finger. She did it all by herself. And now, because the political right in South Korea is so deeply divided, without even being able to reach any kind of judgment on who a preferred presidential candidate might be, if Kim Jong-un is smart, we'll see, he should be patient, because in another less than 2 months he gets the kind of government in Seoul that he's probably dreamed about for a long, long time.
Professor Yu, could I ask you to answer the question about war? Here we are. We were supposed to be talking about this sort of golden future of reunification, and here we are. We end the day talking about war. Are you afraid that that's more likely?
I wonder, I couldn't understand what the question are. But anyway, so let me try to answer. 북한 사람들이 그 통일이나 전쟁에 대해서 뭐 공식적으로 갖고 있는 입장들은 저희들이 알고 있지만 실제로 어떤 생각을 갖고 있는지 그런 것들을 저희가 물론 그 탈북자들 인터뷰를 통해서 알 수는 있죠. 근데 공식적으로는 당연히 공식적으로 보면 북한이 오히려 통일에 대해서 더 남쪽 사회보다 훨씬 더 강한 그 담론을 가지고 있습니다.
Officially, there are statements regarding reunification officially published by the North Korean government. However, Professor Ryu doesn't really know how receptive the actual society and the actual people of North Korea is regarding to reunification. However, based on the official statement of the North Korean government, Professor Ryu points out that North Korea is rather more enthusiastic than South Korea when it comes to talks about reunification and discourses about reunification.
뭐 저는 2003년에 두 번 평양을 다녀왔고 2008년도에 금강산 관광이 중단될 때까지 굉장히 자주 금강산을 갔는데 뭐 여러분들 다 아시다시피 북한에 가면은 굉장히 공식적인 그런 그리고 뭐라 그럴까요 이렇게 짜여져 있는 각본에 이렇게 짜여져 있는 그런 말들을 많이 하기 때문에 그걸 액면 그대로 저는 믿을 수는 없다고 봅니다. 그렇지만 어쨌든 그런 상황으로 놓고 보면 통일 굉장히 적극적으로 얘기를 합니다.
So, Professor Ryu has visited Pyongyang twice and also has frequently visited Geumgang Mountain until it shut down to it was shut down to tourism for South Koreans. But based on what he was experiencing in Pyongyang and in North Korea, he believes that the statements that he was hearing from government and the people were very statements that were as if they're from a propaganda and as if they were directed by the government to be said in a certain way.
Thank you. I think we'll push the boundaries and have just two more questions, if you could.
Please, 남쪽하고 비교를 해보자면 더 통일에 대해서 좀 더 뭐 많은 생각을 갖고 있다고 생각을 합니다. 그리고 좀 더 강한 생각을 갖고 있다고 저는 그렇게 발견할 수 있습니다.
So based on what Professor Ryu hears from people who escaped from North Korea, North Korean people are more receptive and more open to the idea, and they feel more passionate about the idea of reunification.
대답이 됐는지 모르겠습니다.
I hope it answered your question.
A gentleman here in the white jumper. Please, and just one more. The woman down here with the maroon jacket. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I finally got the chance to ask. I'm from South Korea, and I'm quite wondering. You said the reunification based on nationalism, like kinship, is quite important, right? But I wonder if whether it is still effective this course to pursue reunification to South Korean citizens. And secondly, actually, you said like we should achieve reunification, but you said it doesn't have to necessarily the shape of unitary government, right? Which is quite actually different from South Korean government status because South Korean government pursues federation government, not confederation government. So, I mean, for my understanding, I just think why not just giving up the notion of reunification? If you want to argue for just peace building, why not just giving up reunification, the idea? Because obviously North Korea can accept it quite threatening. So, actually, I personally think when we like repeat to say we have to achieve reunification, it seems like it makes more difficult to achieve reunification for me. So I just wonder. Thank you.
Thank you for the question. So give it up. And one last question.
So, yes, that is working good. Okay, so as a Brit at the moment, I'm trying to accept some sort of identity change. So I feel European. And I find it hard to accept. But so I believe it was Dr. Pollock who said that North Korea cannot be treated as an equal partner due to kind of size and different aspects. So would South Koreans, so 한국 사람, would you consider changing your name and identity to be more accommodating to North Korea? Where if there was a unification. So could you imagine being, say, Chuseon Saram,
That's a very interesting point, because developing the BBC Korean service, we have to deal with exactly those kind of things. What do you call it? You know. Anyway, let me ask. I will just very briefly, if Professor Ryu would do that. Firstly, you mentioned that you try to inspire your young students with the idea of unification. Maybe just go for peace, forget unification, and then the idea that the identity is already divided.
I need some much more the explanation of mine as regarding the unification issue. Why we should attain the unification for the Korean people? That is very. I think it needs more historical explanation, understanding. 굉장히 많은 얘기를 해야 되는데 제가 현실적으로 봤을 때는 통일을 그 단일 국가로 만드는 것이 어렵기 때문에 단계적으로 설정을 해서 가자는 말씀을 제가 드린 것이고 실제로 1989년도에 지금 현재의 한국 정부가 공식적으로 견지하고 있는 통일 방안, 민족 공동체 통일 방안입니다. The Korean Commonwealth, the formula of Korean Commonwealth in 1989. 그 당시에 그걸 만들었던 때에 저의 선배 통일부 장관님이 이홍구 장관님이세요. 홍굴리. 그분께서 저에게 얘기하기를 그 민족 공동체 통일 방안은 첫 번째 단계는 화해 협력 단계 (reconciliation and cooperation stage), the second 국가 연합 state yes federation of state 그 the last final stage is a unitary state. 근데 이용구 총리께서는 그 당시에 사실은 세 번째 unitary state를 두고 싶지 않았다는 겁니다. 그러니까 그 federation 그 수준에서 끝내고 싶었는데 그렇게 하게 되면 한국 사회에서 반발이 있을 것 같아서 unitary state까지 갔다고 얘기를 했습니다.
So in order to fully explain what Professor Ryu meant by a peaceful reunification, he needs to explain too much, but to cut to the chase. So realistically, to achieve a complete unitary state is very difficult. So what he proposes is that we do a systematic reunification to achieve the full picture of a peaceful reunification. So in fact, the idea that his perspectives were drawn from was the 1989 formula of Korean Commonwealth, in which Professor Ryu's former minister, who served before Professor Yu as a minister of unification, proposed three steps into the systematic reunification. First step, which was reconciliation and cooperation. Second, federation of state. And finally, creating a unitary state. But what Professor Ryu points out is that the minister who served before him actually did not have in mind to achieve up to the third step of a unitary state because he believed the federation of state was good enough, yet he still had to propose the third final step of unitary state because otherwise there would be too much disagreement and uprising among the Korean population and the society.
저는 그 박근혜 정부에서 처음에 박근혜 정부가 시작했을 때 이 민족 공동체 통일 방안을 계승 발전시킨다 하는 그런 공약이 있었습니다. 그래서 제가 공직에 있을 때 1989년에 만들어졌던 민족공동체 통일 방안을 어떻게 25년이 지나서 2013년도에 그래서 이걸 어떻게 좀 바꿀 수 있을 것인가 발전시킬 수 있을 것인가 하는 그런 생각을 했었고 실제로 2014년도에 만들어졌던 통일준비위원회에서 그 방안을 어떻게 좀 바꿀 것인가 이런 논의를 시작한 적이 있습니다. 시작은 했지만 시작을 하려고 했는데 제대로 시작도 못했어요, 사실은.
So at the beginning of the Park administration, there was former President Park actually proposed proposed to further develop the 1989 formula of Korean Commonwealth, in which the main question was how to further improve and develop on a formula that was made and created in 1989 to set it in the context of 2014. So in 2014, Professor Ryu actually attempted to improve upon the formula by creating a reunification preparation committee, but it was only attempted and did not yield to a successful result.
Thank you very much. Very brief comment, if you will, please, Professor Ryu.
I just add 2 points. First, about the North Korea attitude towards unification. I think before 1992, really North Korea leader have a very strong, powerful dream for reunification, particularly Kim Il-sung's 10-point program. Yeah, but after 1992, I think almost North Korea leader drop this unification dream. They think it's almost impossible. Yeah, to be realized. The best goal for them is to prevent from a swap option by South Korea. I talked with one of North Korea and academia. I asked them because at that time is the Kim Dae-jung Sunshine policy. I think because North Korea embraced the Sunshine policy very much. I say, what's your evaluation? He said, we think there's some motive behind Kim Dae-jung's Sunshine policy. So it means finally they will absorb North Korea. But we tactically accept because they give us a lot of assistance. Yeah. So this is 1 point. Another point is Commonwealth or Kim Dae-jung lose or confederation unification or one country, two system. Maybe in theory, it could work, but in reality, I don't think it could work. Unless North Korea drop nuclear weapons, North Korea adopts really reform policy, become a kind of like a Vietnam, then you could thinking over such kind of a commonwealth.
Thank you very much. The organizers have decided that we'll come back tomorrow and do it all again. Bad joke. Could you do it in a minute?
Literally a minute. I remember Lee Ming-kuo's formula that you alluded to, but I also remember a speech that he gave in Los Angeles that I heard in the late 1990s when he talked about all the reasons to think about a gradual evolutionary relationship. And then he said something that has always stayed with me. He said, but if the door to unification opens, we, and by we he meant the Republic of Korea, we must walk through it. So we shall see. Reality has a way of surprising us.
Thank you to our panel. Thank you very much to the organizers. Thank you for staying. Personally, I'm deeply encouraged by what we've heard today. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you. Yeah, go to the chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. I have a question to ask you.
Thank you for your supplementary answer.
I know we need to leave this room pretty soon, but we'll do a really brief closing remarks just to thank all the speakers who participated in the panel today. It's been a really lively discussion, and thank you all to the floor as well. So we've started today with an opening keynote by former Unification Minister, how not only South Korea and North Korea, but also the world should approach the unification issues, and how it should be a step-by-step gradual process. And then we moved on to geopolitical context panel, where it really set the tone for the entire conference, giving the background of the key issues North Korea is facing in this global context. And also we had some China's perspectives towards these issues as well. And then we talked about the economic changes, which often is not covered in the media, where like there are lots of marketization and reforms happening in North Korea. And also we had some like Eastern European perspectives as well, so that was very interesting. And then we moved on to the most, I would say, the liveliest panel discussion on the engagement issues with North Korea. It was more of an approach in a micro, at a micro level, so it was a lot more like a fresh perspectives compared to the previous panels where we looked at North Korea issues at a more macro level. And then we finally we finished off with this unification panel where we talked about how the South Korea and North Korea each should approach this unification issues, as well as the U.S. perspective and China's perspective. So it is really global and as well as regional perspectives all mixed very well. So thank you all so much. But before I let you go, we are planning to do an e-book out of this conference, which this is something we are going to talk to the chairs and the panelists later on after the conference. But it's going to be an exciting project where we will have this as a conference and proceedings as a longer-term project after the conference.
Yeah, maybe I take the pleasure on behalf of the Institute of Global Finance, which happily supported the students to organize this conference today, to say the final words. I want to thank you all. It's amazing on a Saturday, beautiful Saturday, London afternoon. You are still here at six, and you want to be kicked out. Wow. It's amazing. Yeah, yeah. It really shows the dedication and your interest and commitment. Thank you so much for that. We thank Mr. Ambassador to stay all the way through. Also, very impressive. Thank you for your support. Well, that's true. This was the best place in London today, we hope to believe. We want to thank very much to our speakers. It's been a long journey for many of you. Thank you for making time. And most of all, thank you to our students, indeed. So let me name a few of them. You have seen so many around, but the key leaders. So Anjung Cho over there. So she was the one who a year ago came to us and doggedly persisted with her ideas. J.U. Kim, you have seen him as well on the top, has been a critical partner in this endeavor. And I was very happy to see that the close collaboration between the student society of the Korean student bloc and the student society of Chinese students very much. And Tingrui Jan, I hope I pronounce it well, and colleagues have supported beautifully this endeavor. This was first of its kind, hopefully to be continued. So finally, I think we have to take proud in the fact that we have not wasted this beautiful London afternoon. We've learned a lot, particularly because as is the bottom line, and we heard from Jonathan, that North Korea and the Korean Peninsula will be a key player in the geopolitical theater in the coming months and year, for better or worse. So our knowledge and experience will certainly pay off. Thank you so much.
So there are some refreshments ready outside, so if you want to go out and grab some beer, wine, and do some networking, that would be great. Thank you very much again.
Hello.
Hi there.
I'm Tim.
I'm going to ask the last question.
Sure. Yes. My question to you is very simple.